Oh, hello and welcome to The Witch's Grim. Stories and education with a witchy twist. If it's weird, we want to talk about it. So, pull up a broom, holster that wand, and get comfy, because we're about to get started.
Warning, this podcast contains discussions of an adult nature and sometimes a graphic nature. It's not suitable for children. Strong language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back to The Witch's Grim. This is Lacey, and today I'm joined with a new co-host, Savvy. Savvy is my daughter. She's absolutely brilliant and gives me a run for my money on research. If I don't know it, she definitely does. And yes, I'm so excited to have her here. All right, today we're jumping right back into cryptids. And do we have some crazy ones in store for you today? We were both assigned 5 states. We did our research and we didn't share anything with, didn't share anything about them with each other. So it's going to be interesting, you know, to learn. All new. So, yeah. So we're going to be covering Utah, Nevada, Arizona, Southern Cali, and New Mexico. Those will be brought to you by Savvy. And I will be covering Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, and Hawaii. I'm not sure what Savvy will cover, but I'm going to skip over, you know, the Bigfoots, the lake monsters. Lake monsters are pretty prevalent in the country. Nebraska has Alcali Lake Monster. New York has Kipsey. Oregon has Caddy. Maine has Cassie. Lake Erie has Bessie. Lake Tahoe has Tessie. There's Chessie and Flessie. You get it. So we're just going to, yeah, I do think Savvy probably does have one.
Okay, so I mentioned the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And it's fucking whack. It is whack as hell. There's like 7 ish things that have to do with the Great Salt Lake.
Yes, yeah. So it's all within that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like for example, a really well-known one is, like, the whales that are, like, supposedly in the Great Salt Lake.
Yes.
Is, like, an example that would be, like, Nessie and Flessie and all that.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I'm not gonna, like, really go into any of them because mm-hmm. they're... Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So, do you want to go first or do you want me to start it off?
I'm good with anything.
Okay.
Your poison.
All right, I'll start off. We're going to start off with Idaho. Okay. And I am going to talk about the little people. I was trying to decide between the water babies, but I think that you might cover that.
I did not write it down, but we can just kind of jump in when we know that it's in a state and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
It does show up in a lot of states.
Yeah, lots. And they're a little different, comparatively between the states, but yes. Okay. So the Shoshone people of Idaho, they tell stories of little people. They're also called dwarves, obviously. Nimmer. I'm going to just slaughter this. Nimmer Jirari, I believe, is what they are called. And that literally translates to cannibals. So they're about 2.5 to 3 feet tall with a full row of canine teeth. They carried poisonous arrows and tiny bows. Okay. Yes. They would raid and make war with the Shoshone and the Paiute people in Wyoming and Idaho. They're tricksters, and the people would fear they would turn them on each other and steal their children. Okay, some say they were defeated. Others say they still live in the mountains, in the Owyhee Mountains. In fact, in 1932, a fully formed, well-preserved 14-inch mummy was found in the Pedro Mountains. And that's only about 60 miles south of Casper. So think towards Rawlins by Alcova Lake and in between Alcova and Pathfinder Lake, but back behind where you can't get to.
Yeah, like around.
Yes, yeah. So prospectors, right? I know. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. So prospectors found him when blasting for gold, and a cave opened up, and there he was, sitting cross-legged. He had brown leathery skin, wrinkled forehead, low flat sloped nose, heavy lidded eyes, and wide mouth and lips. He was so well preserved, you could still see his fingernails. The top of his head was said to be covered in a soft jelly-like substance that like still was pliable. And I just wonder how they knew that. What did they do? Is that what you would do if you like, if you, you know, blasted open a cave and you see this mummy, are you going to just walk right up to it and just start playing with it? You know, like, okay. Like for us being witches and who we are, we would not do that. You know what I mean? We would be like, holy shit, we're going to leave like an offering and be like, so sorry for, you know, coming into your sacred space. We love you. Goodbye. And just brick that shit back up. Right? You know? Yeah. But no, these people decided that it would be a good idea to go over and mess around with it and poke at it and then take it back to Casper.
I always try to think of, you know, when how in like movies when people see like a red puddle on the floor, they go, yeah, let's
dip my finger in it and taste it.
I'm like, okay, I know, like, architects and, like, geologists, like, need to do that because that's their job. That's not fun, but that's right. Different.
Uh-huh.
But for just anyone to do that is so
crazy. Especially with a little person like that, like a little mummified man. Just to me, that's disrespectful, but... Anyways, so, yeah. So,
for any kind of body. Like that's just...
White people. So, they did take it back. So these people, they lived, as you can see, between Idaho and Wyoming. There are reports of them being seen in other places. Like, I believe in Tennessee, they found a whole, like, 6-acre land of these pygmy people that they call them, there too, and somewhere else, but I can't remember. It was up by Maine, Massachusetts, maybe something like that. But x-rays were performed on this part, the one that they found, and a perfectly formed skeleton, man-like in structure, was seen in the things.
Fully formed.
He died from blunt force trauma to the head, and he had a broken back, broken collarbone. They determined that he was 65 years old and had a full row of canine teeth, exactly like what the Shoshone people described these, you know, little people to be like.
So, fun fact about humans, we are omnivores.
Mm-hmm.
We, even though we have pointy teeth, we do not have canine teeth.
Right.
Our teeth are designed to chew meat, but not chew through it.
Right.
It is designed to make it softer and tear it if we need to. Canine teeth are designed to tear through meat.
Yes. Raw meat. Yeah.
Because that is what canines eat.
Yes.
So yeah. That is like the little difference.
Right.
Anybody needed to know.
Right. Yeah. So this guy, he's still out there somewhere. He's been in museums all over the place. He's passed from buyer to buyer. But in the 1980s, the last owner to have had him passed away, and he hasn't been seen since. There's no whereabouts on him. They don't know where this mummy is now. But the indigenous people still warn people about the tiny people eaters. And it's believed that they still live in the mountains and high places of Wyoming and Idaho. And if that is the case, I wonder what they thought about Shirsty's fairy garden. Because we had a friend that when we've lived all over the place, as I've mentioned before. One of the places was Casper, Wyoming. We lived up near the base of the mountain, and we had a friend that lived up at the very top of the mountain in a cabin, and she had a extensive fairy garden.
Wasn't it like life-sized?
It was all, yeah, it was the whole, her whole yard. But it was cute, but yeah. At the same time, it was unsettling.
But like now knowing.
Yeah.
This too, it was even more unsettling.
So yeah, so that's what I found out. I could go into a lot more detail about it, but we only have an hour. So, and we have quite a lot to cover. So,
yeah.
So we'll move on to you. What's yours? We'll just kind of flip flop back and forth between.
Okay. Would you like to pick a state?
No, you just go ahead. You tell me.
Well, South California is the first one that is.
Southern California. So. Yeah.
The Riverside Monster is the first one that I found. The Riverside Monster is described as scaly and leaf-like.
I love it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
on November 8th, 1958, Charles Wetzel, yes, it's this one.
Oh, it's this one.
Yeah, it's
Wetzel,
this one.
Okay.
Was heading home. Driving along North Main Street, he arrived where Santa Ana crossed, and he noticed the river was overflowing and that traffic had slowed. His radio turned to static, and as if on cue, a creature jumped from the bushes. He said, when it saw me in the car, it reached all the way back to the windshield and began crawling to me. It didn't have ears, its face was round, and its eyes were shining like something fluorescent, and it had a protruded mouth. That's it. That's the whole story.
Okay.
But, yeah. If that gives you, there was like a drawing of it, and it was like, it didn't add this part, but apparently this motherfucker was like 7 feet tall.
Okay.
And its arms were each like 4 feet long.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it was like a giant, like.
Leafy mer person.
Yeah. But then, you know, like the leaf bugs?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a giant scaly leaf bug.
Yeah. So is this the one that you told me that Charles...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so the strangest part about this was another man, also named Charles Wetzel. They were both
named... Both Charles Wetzel.
Charles Wetzel, yeah. saw a deer-like animal crossing, or chasing his dogs near his cabin in Nebraska. And when he got closer, it was a kangaroo.
Oh.
In Nebraska.
A kangaroo in Nebraska.
And when... got closer, it left.
Oh.
It hopped off.
So two Charles Wetzels from different parts of the country saw weird creatures. Was it on the same day?
It was about a month apart.
Oh.
Different people, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, significant enough. And the second one, it wigged about enough that he went to the police about it.
Oh.
Yeah. He was like,
why is there a kangaroo in Nebraska?
Was upset that there was a kangaroo in his car.
I think I might be too.
Well, I mean, there's a kangaroo chasing his dog, so I would be a little upset too.
Right?
Have you ever seen those beefy motherfuckers?
Yes. Yeah, they're scary.
Yeah.
They could do some damage to you.
Yeah.
real quick, I'll talk about another one in Wyoming because the Idaho little people. The Nimigari, you know, they span Idaho and Wyoming, but there is another one that I've never heard about. And it's crazy to me that we lived so close to all of these places that they talk about. Yeah. So another one is called the Death Ship of the Platte River.
Mm.
Okay. So this is on the Platte River between Torrington and Alcova. Okay. Do you remember where Torrington was? I believe that's near... Martin's Cove.
Oh, okay,
In between. Or Torrington might be where the gas station, that weird gas station in the middle of nowhere where the road forks.
Oh,
and you go to Rollins or you turn towards other places.
Yeah.
So, there's a legend that persists about a ship of death. So, the ship of death sails on upon the sometimes dangerous waters. Alcova can be kind of crazy, especially when it floods.
Yeah.
And when this happens, when there's some dangerous waters around, a phantom ship rises out of a strange mist that quickly becomes a massive rolling ball of fog. And as the ship grows closer, witnesses have reported that its sails and masts are covered in frost. The crew, also covered in frost, stand on the deck and huddle around a corpse lying on a canvas sheet. And the legend continues that the ship always foreshadows the death of someone who will die on the day it is spotted, and it is always the person that's seen on the deck that dies in real life. So the crew will step back and reveal the corpse of whoever is going to die, and that person does in fact die that day. Okay. The first sighting was made in 1862 by a trapper named Leon Weber. And when the crew stepped back, the corpse revealed the body of Weber's fiance, who died later that same day. Okay. Another sighting of the phantom ship was made by a cattleman, Gene Wilson, in 1887. And when he saw his wife's body laid out on the canvas, she died that day. Now, is it really what's going on, or are these men killing their wives?
Yeah.
And one got wind of that. Oh, well, I knew she was going to die because I saw this ship appear out of nowhere in this man-made lake in Wyoming.
Like, oh, my gosh, I saw it, too.
I saw it, and she was on the deck, and what do you know? She died.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Okay. And then the other guy was like, man, that's a really good idea. I'm going to use that story, too.
Yeah.
So it goes on to say that in 1903, another tale describes that a man spied the ship when Victor, I don't know how to say it, Hybe, was chopping down a tree on his riverfront property. Laid out on the deck was the body of one of his close friends. And later that day, that particular close friend died. Every case was reported in the late fall, and in all cases, the person seen on the deck of the phantom ship died the very same day. So one of the sightings allegedly occurred 6 miles southeast of the town of Guernsey, Wyoming. Another sighting was said to have occurred at Bessemer Bend. And that's I think Bessemer Bend is right there in Casper.
Is that where you turn to go to Gillette?
Bessemer Bend is right where the fly fisherman statue is in the river.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I believe. I could be mistaken. But
where the geocache is?
It might be where the geocache is, yeah. Let's see. We've been to Bessemer Bend. I just won't remember.
It sounds familiar.
Oh, okay. It's right before the river disappears behind the mountains where I always say, oh, I love that house. It's right on the river.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. Yeah. That's Bessemer Bend.
Understand.
All right. Hopefully we're drawing some sort of a picture for you all to imagine this beautiful area in Casper, Wyoming. All right. Do you want to share another? You're good to drink your snacks.
I'm going to drink all the jerky.
Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Legend has it that a monster lived in Elizabeth Lake. This is in Arizona.
Okay.
By the way.
Maricopa County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Early Spanish settlers supposedly told stories that the devil himself created the lake and kept one of his pets in it. One of the earliest recorded stories is from the 1830s. It recorded that Don Pedro Carrillo... abandoned a ranch on the lake shore after structures on the property were destroyed by a mysterious fire. He complained that La Laguna...
It breathes fire. Anyways, go ahead.
Does that mean that it breathes fire?
I guess, yeah.
Is it a flame?
Well, it's a devil. It's a lake water devil. Go ahead.
That means that it's a flying...
That means one-eyed, it's a... One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
Yeah. Yep. But that means that it's a... Water dragon that breathes fire.
Yeah.
It breathes fire.
Toshinori? Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Mom! Oh, no. where was I? In 1855...
Sorry, I threw you off.
You're good. American settlers tried moving into the area, only to later abandon it with complaints of disturbing and unnatural nocturnal noises and sightings. Not long afterward, rancher and new owner Don Francisco Chico Lopez, after whom the lake came to be named Laguna de Chico Lopez, range boss Chico, I'm not going to say any of those names.
Okay.
Just skip it. Claimed to witness at the lake a huge monster larger than the greatest whale with enormous bat-like wings. It would roar and splash the water with what appeared to be great flippers or legs. Lopez subsequently also abandoned the lakeside property, claiming that his livestock was vanishing. In 1886, another rancher, Don Felipe Rivera, claimed to see a 45-foot beast.
45-foot beast?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the lake that tried to eat one of his steers. Ranch Miguel Leones, who subsequently, why do they keep using these words, acquired the land.
You don't have to read it word for word.
I know, but... acquired his own encounter. He reported his own encounter with a griffin-like creature at the lake. Upset with disappearing livestock, he claimed that he laid in wait for the creature one night and wanted to attack and injure it, which he believed that made it flee the area. He was the last to report any sightings of the creature.
Okay.
The story, however, went on to say that the creature began appearing in further into Arizona, where it was ultimately killed.
Ah, so they claim to have killed it.
Yeah.
Do they have proof of this?
No. They claimed. descriptions of the creature are close to that of the legendary Thunderbird, commonly found in Native American mythology. Some suggest that had a large...
They're comparing a lake monster with bat wings to a Thunderbird?
Yeah.
Okay. That breathes fire.
I just would like to say that I am reading this from a website. I am not saying this from my own perspective. I would just like to say that right now.
Yes.
None of this is from me.
Okay.
Some suggest that had a large flying creature actually been seen at Elizabeth Lake, it may have been the California condor, which, although such a bird, even with a wingspan of up to 9.5 feet, does not seem enormous of a creature, as described from the Elizabeth Lake lore.
So, what I'm seeing on this, because I'm obviously researching it as you're reading, Elizabeth Lake is located in California.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's lying to me?
It's lying. It says it's right by the San Andreas Fault.
Mm.
The fault line. Still, that's fine. I'm sure there is also another one in Arizona.
Yeah.
Because I find that there's lake monsters everywhere. Okay, yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
You're good.
That was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They killed it, huh?
Yeah.
That's so sad. Lame.
Yeah, and I...
You know, if there are, you know, all of these mythical creatures, we do believe in them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, leave it to, like, white men to kill all of anything magical off. Because
right.
They don't understand it.
Because, of course, if it's mad at you for being in its territory, you have to kill it instead of just leaving.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right, so we're going to talk about the Dogmen, or the Shunka Warain. Mm-hmm. I think it's Warain, mm-hmm. From Montana. They go all over the place. I think that you found word of it in, Arizona? New Mexico?
I think that it was mentioned in New Mexico, Nevada, and Utah.
Utah. Okay. So, I'm going to group them together because I found something that talks about both of them, that they might also be, like, one and the same. Okay?
Okay.
So, Let's see. The creature is described throughout various cultures as having been just a black dog, while the majority of official black dogs are believed to be an omen of misfortune and impending death, others are thought to be protectors of those who need a little spiritual help. Some are described as being vicious and guards of certain locations, while others are thought to be escorts to the recently departed. There's no real method to pinning down what the creatures truly are, as no two of them are similar. So the black dogs are all over the map, both figuratively and literally. So when it comes to trying to figure out what exactly they are, it's best to focus solely on one thing at a time. So there's one called the fence rail dog. Okay. And they call it the fence rail dog because it stands like 4 feet high, and the shoulders of the dog come to the top of a fence rail. Oh, that's how okay. tall it is.
So it's like huge.
Huge.
Okay. It's like a mastiff, but bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So it says that the dog is said to be nearly 10 feet long from tip of the nose to the bottom of its tail. It has a bushy tail, and they have red eyes.
Okay.
And their hind legs are shorter than their front legs, and their back arches down, so it kind of looks like a hyena in a way.
Okay.
So, it says that they mostly keep to themselves, and they just kind of watch people. And they have been known to run alongside cars.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
One legend says that the fence rail dog is a spirit of an outlaw. Excuse me, who committed suicide after being surrounded by, in his home by local authorities. And then rather than going to jail, he chose to end his own life. He unalived himself, but he came back as a vengeful black dog. A serious black, anyone? We just binge watched Harry Potter.
Yeah, we did. A few times.
Another one goes on to say that it is the spirit of a young slave boy who was killed by an abusive owner, and whose body was desecrated and disposed of near a site of this highway, and so it roams highways. Mm-hmm. So, so it comes back looking for its final resting place, and he's looking for a soul. Mm-hmm. I would hate to think that that's the case, because I don't think that somebody that was tortured, would come back and be tortured longer to try and find his soul.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's fucked up.
Yeah. Makes me sad. And then finally, there's a legend that says that the fence rail dog is actually a ghost of a dog who came back to exact its revenge for the murder of its owner. So somebody killed him and his owner. The story claims that when alive, the dog belonged to a kind man who was the landlord of a boarding house. And while dealing with an angry and violent tenant one day, the landlord was murdered and chopped up, ground to fine chunks, and fed to his dog. And then the dog was killed. So, came back, pissed off that happened. Now he's avenging his person. So, the Shunka Warakin is a creature that was first described in 1977 as a wolf-like dog that strangely resembled a hyena. Okay. The story goes that during the 1880s in Montana, a dark-colored beast that resembled a mix between a wolf and a hyena was shot at while chasing geese on a ranch near the Madison River. While the Shunka Warakin managed to escape the near-kill shot, it took its chances and returned to the ranch a few days later, and it tried to kill their smaller livestock. But everyone who managed to get a look at the animal described it as being absolutely completely black in color, having high shoulders, and possessing the back that sloped down like a hyena. The creature was ultimately shot and killed this second time around in January, and was later stuffed and put on display in Idaho. Of course they did. Now, while this particular creature unfortunately met its demise at the end of a gun, other possible specimens have been and are still being encountered in modern times. Mm-hmm. We read an article. When we say that we don't talk about this with each other when we're researching, that's a freaking lie. Because we can't. It's really hard. Unless we're not sitting in the same room, we have to say stuff because we come across it and we're like, what the fuck? You know, so then we kind of discuss a little bit of it.
Yeah. Like, normally I try to research when I'm at school so that I don't talk about it.
Yeah. So, but we have both had COVID for 2 freaking weeks. We are still trying to fight it, but we're feeling a lot better now.
Yeah.
But we found some articles on this, and they were talking about how the people in the in this town of Montana, I can't remember what the town was called, but anyways, that these creatures are seen daily, and they are told by government officials to keep quiet about it, to not talk about it. You know, out of sight, out of mind, right? Except for they're not out of sight. They just are telling them to act like they don't see them. Just act like you don't see them. It's fine. So, yeah, I think that's crazy. That's suspicious.
That's weird.
That's weird. So, yeah. So, they're all over the place still. We did see a picture of one that was shot. They said that it was a gray wolf. It did look weird. It was freaking gigantic. It did have weird proportions. Lewistown?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It did have weird proportions. It had oversized ears compared to its weird short muzzle. It had really short paws and really long claws. The front arms were huge and long and, like, bulky.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very strange looking. They did come back and say that it was just a gray wolf with, you know, like, what's it called?
With the deformities.
Deformities, yeah. I was going to say malnutrition. That's what I kept trying to say, but it was deformities that I wanted to actually say. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good.
So, they don't know, but yeah, I guess we'll just let that steep for you a little bit about how, you know, it's just a gray wolf, but don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So.
I would also like to say that they don't actually know a lot about dire wolves. They believe that they went extinct a few hundred years ago, I think. But they found proof, I think 3 years ago, that they didn't actually go extinct because they found a relatively recent skeleton from, like, 40 years ago of a dire wolf. So, they don't actually know if they're alive or not anymore.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, there's such a vast majority of the United States that you can't continuously cover. Just like Alaska, you have no idea. Or Canada, you have, it doesn't matter if you say you've discovered everything. There are so many parts of this country and the world that have not been discovered. Or, like, not discovered, but...
but, like, searched.
Searched in order to discover things. Yeah. But anyways, you never know.
Yeah, and even when it has been searched, it's not like you can constantly be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have another?
For Utah?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you ready for this one?
I think so.
This is the one with the Great Salt Lake and everything.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? So, there's the whales, obviously.
The whales, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. So, these are all in the Great Salt Lake or around it, or, you know, on the, like, the islands in the Great Salt Lake. You know, the usual. There's the whales that are totally in the Great Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. That, like, you know, live in the, like, overly salted water.
Yeah. Of the man-made lake.
Of the man-made.
I think the Great Salt Lake is man-made.
I don't remember. But, like, you know, the unlivable.
Yeah.
Totally livable salted water. Whales live there.
It's natural.
It is natural.
It's the largest natural lake west of the Mississippi.
Damn high.
It's 75 miles long, 35 miles wide. It's a remnant of Lake Bonneville, a great ice age lake that rose dramatically from a small saline lake 30,000 years ago.
That makes sense of why some of these are here.
Yep. Says that the lake level has varied by 20 feet, shifting the shoreline in some places as much as 15 miles. But I don't know how deep it is.
It's pretty deep. I mean, airplanes have crashed there. And are underneath it.
It's 33 feet deep.
Really? That's it?
That's it. The present lake is about 75 miles long and 35 miles wide with a maximum depth of 33 feet. Yeah. That's not very deep. Utah Lake is 14.11 feet. Bear Lake is 207 feet deep. Lake Powell is 558. So it's only 33 feet deep. But there's whales in it. People are crazy. Okay, go ahead. I find it hard to believe that there's a whales in 33 feet deep. Overly salted water. Okay.
Ah!
Continue.
No, you're right. So whales.
Okay.
Water babies.
Yep, we know about the water babies.
Mm-hmm. Those are also in the Great Salt Lake.
So they're fresh and salt water? Makes sense. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, understandable. That might be why they look different in the Salt Lake, too. So, I mean, that would make sense that they have differences.
And water babies are human-like mermaid creatures that are short. They're small. And they're cannibals.
They'll eat you.
Go ahead.
Drag you in. There's also the Great Mosquito.
What? What the hell? What?
It's a winged creature that can suck the blood of it said a tribeman, so it might be a native thing.
Oh, okay.
Like a native creature.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't look into it much. I just wrote these ones down because they were all involving the Great Salt Lake. So right. I just thought they were all funny. But so that one might be native. I think most of these might be native.
Indigenous lore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like indigenous lore. So, like, that would make sense. Like, this next one also might be. A lost tribe of natives that live on the islands and ride elephants. The way you just blink at me.
The island on the Great Salt Lake?
Yeah.
Elephants. Wow. Okay. All right.
There's also horses the size of dogs.
Little teeny horses? Okay.
Yeah, they run around the bank.
All right.
Don't look at me like that.
I'm not looking at you like anything.
There's also salt bears.
Okay.
That blend in with the salt flats and they terrorize vehicles.
I've heard of those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you can only see their eyes.
And the Great Salt Lake is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the salt flats are even bigger. And they are very expansive. And,
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Like, at that point, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Bears,
they can just survive
They're
on
like
the salt.
See-through. You can just see the eyes.
No, the worst part is the polar bear hair is see-through.
Yeah.
It is.
Translucent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Their skin is black and their hair is see-through. But they're white.
Yeah. Creepy. Okay, you get next.
Also, the random unexplained booms. That doesn't have to do with the Great Salt Lake. That's just in Utah in general.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's in any other states, but that's all over Utah. Specifically at 11 o'clock at night.
They say they're sonic booms, and but the military denies that that's what it is.
Yeah. This one is with the Great Salt Lake.
Okay.
There's a couple of ghosts that are connected to the Great Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
They're all criminals.
Okay.
But something Baptist... I don't remember his name. And then John P. Smith or something.
Okay.
You can look into it if you want. But the wrathful ghosts and spirits are blamed for the strange amount of aircraft crashes. The Great Salt Lake has been known as the Inland Bermuda Triangle for the lost aircrafts, many of which go down under mysterious circumstances.
Good thing the, you know, regional airport is right there, the international.
Oh, yeah.
Salt Lake Airport is right, yeah, right on the bogs of it.
Oh, it goes straight over it, yeah, too. So does the Hill Air Force Base.
Yeah.
It crosses straight over it, their main flight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, straight over.
Nice.
But yeah, there's, like, a shit ton of flights have gone over it, and there's a bunch of flights that have, like, crashed, and, like, there's still, like, pieces of airplanes at the bottom of it.
Yeah. We need to go there more often. However, when we do go there and we stop at the salt flats, I get, like, an eerie feeling, and I don't like to be there for very long.
I like to go wander off in the salt flats.
I know, you do. And then I, like, get mad at you until you come back.
Have you seen the person on TikTok who is, hiking in the salt flats? Mm-mm. He stopped posting, like, a month ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's just gone. He's walking.
Become one of them.
but, yeah, he was, I don't know, I haven't checked on him for a while, but he was, like, just out there, like, walking. I mean, like, just, like, I think he was, like, walking to another city or something, and he was, like, going through the salt flats, but he was, like, in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden this, like, person started walking towards him in one of his videos, and he was like, yo, who the fuck is
Oh,
that?
I remember that.
Yeah! Yes!
They did not post after that?
I don't think so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was like, yo, who is that? And he was like, yo, if I don't post after this, I'm dead.
Yep.
And I don't, I've never seen another video from him.
All right, we gotta go on, because we're at over an hour.
Oh, fun. Okay, anyways.
So, I'm gonna talk about Colorado. Okay. So, in Colorado, you know, they've got, like, trolls and vampires.
Of course.
And no, yetis. Yeah. But I'm gonna talk about
the yucca.
I'm gonna talk about Tommyknockers.
What?
So, leave it to me to find all the faith.
Understandable.
Yes. So, Tommyknockers, it's spelt Tommyknockers, but it's pronounced Tommyknockers. I don't know why they don't just put an A in there. But they're little tricksters. Think of brownies or leprechauns. Yeah. Okay. And they live in the gold and silver mines in Colorado. So, if you hear knocking on the mine walls, it's probably too late to turn around. If it's a mischievous mean one, okay? There are nice ones, apparently. Or they're both, but they lean more towards the mischievous, like, mean side.
Mm-hmm.
So they're about 2 feet tall and described as greenish in color. They look like little men in traditional mining gear, and they live underground, obviously, and are known to do good and bad deeds, more often playing practical jokes and stealing tools and food. The name comes from the knocking on the mine walls just before a cave-in. So, the realist in me wants to say that knocking on the walls before a cave-in is the earth shifting, right? Like, before before, like, an earthquake or something, you can hear the earth shifting. To me, an earthquake coming sounds like a fucking huge semi-diesel passing by. That's what it sounds like to me. But it does make knocking noises too, right? But the witch in me that works with the Fae says they didn't want you to find something. Or you were getting to a dangerous area, and you better not fucking go there, right? Okay?
And they were like, hey, fucking get out.
Depending on how they felt that day.
Maybe.
Yeah. So the Tommyknockers... If the Tommyknockers liked you, you found wealth.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't like you, basically, maybe. Anything that happened in the mines, like, you know, anything good, anything bad that happened in the mines, the little cave gnomes, as they like to call them too, were responsible. They were blamed. It doesn't matter if it was good or if it was bad. They were responsible for it.
Oh, okay.
So back in the day, the miners' wives would bake saffron cakes.
Yeah.
And for the miners' lunches. And when the miners would leave for the night, they would leave some of the saffron cake behind. For
so they leave offerings.
Yeah, they'd leave him little offerings.
So they'd get in their good side.
Good graces, yeah. And if they didn't leave some, a lot of times it would bring misfortune home with you. So, yeah. So we visit mines a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We used to anyways. We haven't gone anywhere since all this COVID nonsense. But we used to go to ghost towns and, mm-hmm. and visit mines and stuff
We'd
a lot.
We'd go to, like, the ones that go underground and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
And so we, next time we go, like, when we go to Ely to go to, like, yeah. Garnet Hill and stuff, we need to take some saffron cake.
Yeah.
And we need to find the recipe. Ooh, maybe that's the first recipe we'll do for the Mystic Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
That would be awesome. Okay, did you have any others?
Yeah, I have Nevada and New Mexico.
Okay. I kind of grouped Idaho and Wyoming together, so after I just have Hawaii. Oh,
okay. So how many do you have in Hawaii?
One.
Okay. Lamalahora, I think is how it's said, is from New Mexico. She goes by a few names, which I'm not going to say all of them, because there's, like, six of them. The entity appears in one of two ways. First, it may appear as a beautiful woman with long, dark hair, with either a black or white dress. This female spirit form glides along the side of roads, her feet not touching the ground. Its other form is essentially a shadow or a black mass, which constantly roils and changes shape. The second form can surround a person in dark mist, disorienting them. And then the legend says that Lamalahora is an evil spirit entity or a demon. It is allegedly feared throughout New Mexico and Mexico on par with the devil himself. It appears along the sides of rural roads, typically before lone travelers, and typically at or near crossroads. It is considered a bad omen at best. The female spirit is dressed in black, is specifically thought to be a harbinger of death and a vengeful demon at worst. Most variations of this urban legend state that those who lay eyes on Lamalahora are either driven insane by the entity or suffocated by its mist.
I wonder if it's Lamalahora. The way that it's pronounced. Lamalahora. Yeah, we'll have to ask. If anybody knows, you let us know. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, if we pronounce anything wrong, then you can correct us.
Yes.
Or we're good for being corrected. That's fine. Though how it is known is unclear. As it only attacks lone travelers and they're found dead the next morning. Those that escape encounters with the entity and claim that it has paralyzed them with fear or hypnotized them into compliancy.
Mm-hmm. Complacency?
Yeah. That one. Encounters. There are really only two stories of encounters with Lamalahora while conducting research for this post. The first and most well-known has dozens, if not hundreds, of slight variations. The tale of this encounter is a woman calls her friend distraught over her impending divorce. The friend jumps in their car and rushes right over. While driving, they come to a fork in the road at which they see Lamalahora. When they arrive at the friend's house, they tell her about the strange woman at the crossroads. The friend explains the legend, in the vein of it being the harbinger of death, and the friend tries to laugh it off, but is met by the police as when they arrive at home. Their husband, who was away in Chicago on business, was mugged and murdered at the moment that they saw Lamalahora. Another supposed encounter, which in some tellings is a variation of the encounter described in the previous paragraph, involved a woman meeting Lamalahora while driving. According to this story, variation, she stepped out in front of the woman's car, causing her to slam on the brakes. Once the car was stopped, she vanished from in front of the car and appeared in the passenger side window.
So its face had transformed from that of a woman into something more demon-like, with red glowing eyes. The woman drove away, and she ran alongside the car for a few more moments before she stopped. As the woman watched from her rearview mirror, she grew in size until she was about the size of a tree, perhaps as a sort of camouflage to take travelers by surprise.
Mm. That's it. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, my last one is in Hawaii. It's called the Sacred Spine. It is a dragon of Hawaiian lore. It's called the Mo'o. One of the most famous legends of ancient Hawaii, Pele, the volcano goddess, sends her youngest sister to rescue a mortal lover. Okay. The Mo'o, a supernatural lizard, has captured Pele's sweetheart and told him holds him hostage in a cave in Kauai. Mm-hmm. Thus, the mission involves a second errand, dragon slaying. Okay, so that's just kind of whatever. So the most Mo'o of legends are female. Mm-hmm. They're shapeshifters capable of appearing as beautiful maidens, or water dragons. And they dwell in the caves, pools, and fish ponds, and are fierce guardians of fresh water sources. According to 19th century Hawaiian historian Samuel Kamakau, when fires were lit on altars near their homes, the Mo'o would appear. Mm-hmm. 12 to 30 foot long reptiles, black as night, glistening in the water. If given a drink of awa, he writes, they would turn from side to side like the keel of a canoe. Mo'o are said to possess profound powers. They're omniscient. They can manipulate weather. Even their disembodied tongues and tails have potency. The more vicious among their tribe have been known to summon giant waves and sweep trespassers from trails, or drown victims in pits of poisonous phlegm. But...
Damn, all right.
Okay. But not all Mo'o are malevolent. Many are beloved protectors who lend aid to their devotees. At one time, fish ponds and pools throughout Hawaii had stone markers signifying their resident Mo'o. And ancient Hawaiians believed that if a Mo'o guardian received proper nurture, she would respond. If the Mo'o guardian received proper nurture, she would respond in like manner, ensuring fat harvest and healthy stream flow. But if she were neglected, she would wreak havoc. The underlying philosophy was respect for the land, a basic tenet of Hawaiian culture. Obviously, mm-hmm. You know, take care of, yeah. To this day, fishermen hoping to catch Hinalea in Wailoa or Oahu call upon the spirit of Kalamainu'u. This Mo'o, according to storytellers, fell in love with a young chief while surfing. After she married him, her cousins Hinalea and Aikalolo disclosed her true identity, then turned into fish and disappeared down a crack in the seafloor. Kalamainu'u cleverly snared her betrayers with a woven trap, and she'll supposedly fill the fish traps of those who ask. So in many stories, when a Mo'o is slain, its body becomes part of the landscape. Viewed through this lens, Hawaii is littered with the remains of giant lizards. On Maui's southern coast, the cinder cone Pu'u Ola'i and Malokini crater, the carved islet offshore are reputed. My God,
I felt that.
The curved islet offshore are reputedly severed pieces of an unlucky Mo'o who crossed Pele. So, on the great outline of a massive lizard can be seen sunning itself on Kamala Ridge. This is Kapweli, a male mo'o who pledged to watch over the area even in death. So there's more. There's so many different ones that they talk about. A lot of different mo'o. But since her emergence in the 1500s, Kia Wahine has enjoyed a greater following than any other lizard goddess. So unlike other mo'o, she reportedly traveled through the islands frequently, a tiny lake at the summit of the West Maui Mountains, a fish pond on the Waihee coast, and pools of Kauai, Molokai, and Hawaii Island. Her primary dwelling was the royal compound at, I think it's Lanai. Is that on Big Island?
Oh, is that where?
Oh, no, that's in West Maui Mountains. So great was Kia Wahine's influence that Kamehameha, the great Keopuolani, a 10-year-old princess, primarily to inherit the girl's sacred lineage, which included the lizard goddess. So, King Kamehameha married her because she had the lizard lineage.
Huh.
Yeah. And Kia Wahine's name, he conquered the islands. He carried her carved image to war, and on the annual Makahiki procession, the only female deity offered that honor. So let's see. There's a huge whole long story about the mo'o in the Maui magazine. But yeah, I mean, it's pages long, but it's an interesting read, but we just don't have a lot of time for it. But yeah, they were dragons. Red lizards were considered dragons in a way.
Damn, understandable.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
I know, it's super cool.
I didn't know that they had dragons.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I love it. Dragons of Hawaiian lore inhabit island's waters, sometimes as protectors, sometimes as shapeshifters. To those who understand the culture, these mo'o are more than myth. She be speechless.
Is the lady that would show up on people's driveways?
That's Pele.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is that Pele or was
Pele
that...
shows up as different things, mostly an older woman.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the story that you're thinking about where she showed up and told them to put the white stones around the house, or are you talking about the one over in Kamuela?
Both.
Okay. Yes, so she will show up, and if you're nice to her, she will tell you something to help you out. So there is a house that was totally missed by the freaking lava because they listened to the old woman and put the rocks around the house, the white coral rocks, I believe.
Yeah.
So it totally diverted the lava. And then you're thinking about the people that live over in Kamuela, and she, like, walked up the thing for water.
Yeah.
And they got her water and stuff, but when they came out, she was gone. But she told them something first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. So, if you're in Hawaii and someone comes up to you and asks you for something, give it to them.
Yeah.
Or listen to them.
You should do that anyways.
Yeah. You should do it anyways, because just be a genuine person.
Yeah, be a good person.
But, you know, and also maybe a god. So
do you want to talk about your last place?
Yeah,
before
Nevada.
Before we say goodbye?
So, we have the first two. Okay. Which are, one of them we already know about, which is the Red-Headed Giants of Lovelock Cave.
The Lovelock Giants, yeah.
So, do we both want to talk about that? You know more about it than I do.
I don't know a lot about it. Oh. I just know that they, there was myth of these giants of Lovelock, and nobody believed it until one day the miners, of course, the miners that blow up all the mountains,
they always
blew a hole
shit.
In the side of a mountain, and a cave opened up, and there was all these giant remains. Red and the red hair, they had tufts of red hair on their skulls.
Okay, so I don't know much about it either, except for kind of the same thing. They found those, and they also found, I don't know if it's the same one or if it's a different case of giants, but they found like huge skeletons of giants that were like 9 feet tall, like 9 to like 15 feet tall, and it was like a bunch of different. I think they found, like, 5 different ones. And I don't remember where it was. I think it was that one.
That would make sense.
Lovelock?
Yeah, unless mm-hmm. it was a different one. There was just a bunch of giants everywhere.
Yeah.
And that would also make sense. But, yeah, I didn't research that one because we both kind of know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also I had three for that one, so.
Yeah.
The last one is Penelope, which is in the Sierra Mountains.
Okay.
Sierra Nevada. Let me pull that up real quick. I haven't read much of this, but it looked whack, so I pulled it up.
Okay.
Every now and then, someone sees or runs across a large, vicious, horrid, humid creature roaming the Sierra Nevadas. Said to be female, thin and 7 feet tall, with long arms and long arms, a deformed face, and long, dirty, light-colored hair, this bestial creature is known as Penelope. She's the subject of urban legend in this area.
She is huge and terrifying, and her name's Penelope. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
She beheads people.
Aw, come on, Penelope. All right, go ahead.
Oh, come on, Penelope. She has claws.
Mm.
Yeah, I know.
What it's a nice, better. Sweet, innocent name for a monster.
I know, that's why I thought this was, like, the perfect one to read, because it's like, you're like, oh, yeah, that's just Penelope. And you're like, who the fuck is Penelope? That's Penelope. I have to point up, because she's 7 feet fucking tall. Oh, yeah,
right.
Have y'all ever read How Tall All Might Is?
Mm.
That's how tall he'd be.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyways. Park rangers in the area have documented a few strange sightings over the years in Sierra Mountains. And these encounters have attributed to this creature, who, for some unknown reason, is referred to as Penelope. She's been described as wearing no clothes, looking like a bestial giant witch. Rumored to be lightning fast with razor-sharp claws, and she has supposedly disemboweled and decapitated her victims before they even realized she was there. Moving so fast they have no time to react before she's upon them. Who is she? Where did she come from? No one is sure, but the short version of this urban legend describes her as a woman who became lost in the Sierra Mountains and somehow turned into a flesh-eating monster that terrorizes the region today.
Wow.
If you piece together the story, Penelope and her husband, one winter, while driving through the Sierras, were hit by a brutal snowstorm, which caused their car to get swept from the road down a cliffside. Penelope awoke from the crash to her decapitated husband's head lying in her lap. Yeah, the story can get a little melodramatic. Her sanity suffering from this, Penelope fled the car into the woods and became lost to the wilderness. She somehow was able to wander the woods, surviving on some berries, insects, and eventually raw birds and small animals, but was unable to find her way to civilization. And here's where the story gets even weirder. Another snowstorm hit. Penelope, searching for shelter, discovered several dumped large metal drums, toxic waste having seeped from them into the ground and area. She huddled inside one of them for protection from the storm and passed out from the ordeal, sleeping in the remnants of toxic waste which seeped into her.
That sounds about right. Toxic waste in the Nevada desert. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's not...
That's where all the mines are. Unbelievable. Right?
Penelope emerged from her sleep, crawling out of the metal drum, a bestial, savage, giant monster with a never-ending urge to eat meat. Now equipped with fangs, claws, and a tangled mesh of hair, she began her journey through the Sierra Mountains looking for prey. Her sanity now long gone, supposedly she went on a murder spree throughout the area. If you believe these theories, she's responsible for derailing a train and eating its passengers, killing unsuspecting hitchhikers, attacking campers, murdering park rangers, and even attacking a mobile home parked where she turned over structures and made off with some of the people who lived there. The last part of this campfire tale has the FBI brought in to handle the issue and hiring a posse of bounty hunters to chase after Penelope. Did this actually happen?
I don't fucking know.
This sounds fucking wild.
Yeah, it does. It says they shot her and killed her.
You're looking at it too?
I found it. Yeah, go ahead.
Look, that's real?
I don't know.
Penelope eventually... Wait, okay. Penelope eventually cornering her in a canyon. Penelope was shot several times and managed to kill several of her pursuers before finally climbing over a cliff and disappearing over the top.
Oh, so no, we don't know if she's dead.
Yeah, no. Okay. And there we have it. A story formed of an urban legend and campfire tales. A giant, vicious killing machine that stalks the wilderness of the Sierra Mountains. And is it true? Is there really a poor woman named Penelope who turned into a giant cannibal as a result of toxic waste jumped in the woods? Probably not, but still. Every now and then, there's a sighting of something. Something horrid. Giant, female, and scary. Although details are sparse and sightings rare, with one being as recent as 2012, park rangers are supposedly aware of her existence and for whatever reason have dubbed it as Penelope. Park rangers named her Penelope.
Okay.
So be careful when camping in the area, or you might end up Penelope's next meal. I hope you all enjoyed my...
Okay, but if you go back down, if you go down to the comments, it says, the creepypasta-style backstory is ridiculous.
You're reading the same one as me!
And degrades the true sightings of this creature. Penelope is a real phenomenon and does not need story embellishments to make it more frightening. I've seen it and can tell you this thing looks like it just ran off a Hollywood horror movie set. I also have spent many nights in the Sierra Nevada mountains, as have we, and the last place I would look for shelter is a steel drum. Besides, sightings of this creature date way before cars or toxic steel drums of radiation. Toxic steel drums of radiation.
Is it actually?
I don't fucking know. I'm looking. I'm trying to find it.
Hold on. Okay. Break. We're gonna come right back.
Okay, so while Savannah's researching, I found a post. It's from occultmystic.blogspot.com. Paranormal news, UFO sightings, magic, and aliens. It's perfect.
It should be.
So this person has been researching Penelope for years and years, and this one time he was out with his wife that he's been married to for 13 years. She's very skeptical of everything, so he said that she wouldn't believe him for a second had she not been there when this happened. They were staying in a lodge in Bridgeport, California, at the Twin Lake Resort. It's in the high Sierra Nevada mountain range. The resort sits in a valley at about 7,000 feet and in the shadow of the mighty Sawtooth Ridge. A beautiful, secluded spot with no cell phone service and tons of wildlife. The date would have been just after Labor Day 2014, at exactly 5:30 a.m., they had just loaded their boat and they were heading out to go fishing. And as they were driving, you know, 5:30 in the morning, it's still pretty dark outside. So they had their headlights on and he sees something run across the road and he initially thinks goat. But then as he watched it closer and it was getting nearer to them, it was coming towards them. He noticed that it wasn't walking normal, like a deer or a goat would walk. He said that he needed some time to figure out what he was seeing, so he asked his wife in the front passenger seat, "What is that?" Pointing at the thing running in our direction, that the likes of which I know I had never seen before. I was mostly confused because its limbs were not bending or moving in the right way that a deer, bear, rabbit, or cats were supposed to move. So I asked my wife, "What is that?" As she slowly responded in disbelief, "What the hell?" Now, when my lights came across the creature, it was crossing the road, and we got the feeling we totally surprised it. As I turned on my high beams, it seemed to get very irritated as it turned its long human-like neck towards us and almost shook its head as it gave us a glare and started to double time along the road, now in our direction. We were getting closer, but instead of being able to more positively ID the creature, I was only more confused, mostly because the thing's legs weren't broken at all. It was running on them, like that. Long, lean limbs. But it was crawling, creeping impossibly low to the ground, like its torso is more than 5 inches from the ground. Yet it was moving at a strangely incredible pace. I wondered first, with such long limbs, why was it so low and not running on the bottom of hooves or paws? How could it run so fast? The order of the feet landing was completely wrong too, and if I was really trying to retreat quickly, it was not bounding or bouncing or swaying side to side. Its limbs moved in unison, like a crab or spider. It appeared to me to be a puppet being moved by a marionette. It was very bizarre. Maybe because I was so puzzled and troubled that I could not classify this animal, it kept me from flipping out when we got close enough to see the facial features. I should describe the features that I saw clearly and up close. As mentioned, a human-like torso, about 4 feet long, no tail, human-like haunches. As we passed it, I saw it was not shaved at all. It was hairless and pale skin. Its limbs were long, very thin, defined muscles. Although it was crawling close to the ground, it had large, very human ape shoulders. I've only seen such shoulders on upright walking animals. It seemed to be running on its 4 knuckles or claws. Imagine a sloth, but foot-long fingers or claws. The neck was thin and long, holding a forward-gazing predator head. The skull had features closer to a human ape than any canine, cat, rodent, or cervidae. Yep, the skull seemed to... The way that this is written...
You worded?
It's hard for me to read it.
Yeah.
ADHD. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, the skull seemed to have a heavy protruding eye ridge with a flat curve leading to nasal openings. The mouth. There was no long snout. This was a tight-lipped human mouth with a long chin that almost seemed to grin, but somehow I knew that it was not a friendly grin. It was evil, but how would an animal have an evil grin, right? If that wasn't enough to freak us out, then came the eyes. So at first sight, my headlights hit this weird thing up, and as with all nocturnal animals, the first noticeable thing, as always, is the reflection of its eyes in the car light. Like all the rest of the many animals I have seen on this tiny stretch of road, their cover was blown instantly from the flash of the eyes. Well, not the case this time, and of all the troubling things I had observed, this probably is the most unexplainable. I was driving right into it, and I could see the eyebrow ridge. I saw deep eye sockets, no shiny large or tiny eyes, just sockets. As I was sure to peer deep into whatever animal it was eyes as we came within 15 feet of it, well, when the moment of truth came, my wife and I were horrified when all we saw were deep red sockets, like the thing had no eyes and there was a red membrane over them. Well, I just about drove off the road and tried to track the thing, but something told me I was better off just watching it run in a cloud of dust into chaparral. The friggin' thing turned its head to look at us, was grinning all with just red eye sockets, and it just zips away, never breaking its creepy crawl. So that's my sighting. I never heard or saw this thing again. I have no idea what it could have been. Nothing adds up. I really feel I was not supposed to see this thing. People like to say maybe it was an experiment gone wrong or a mutated, deformed animal, but what I have to say to that is this thing wasn't sick or dying. It was strong, aware, fast, and would kick the ass of whatever would mess with it. So, if this were a real cryptid, someone else must have seen it since this was a campsite. What would it be doing so close to humans if it depended on seclusion for survival? It doesn't add up. Yeah. So this guy has this website dedicated to it, and he asks for, you know, feedback from other people that have seen it. And supposedly the last sighting of it was in 2020.
Yeah.
Did you find more?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
All right. So
I'm going to read what I found on Penelope specifically, and then I'm going to read what I think it is.
Okay.
And also, it's going to connect to a couple of those things.
It's going to connect to what?
A couple of those things.
What? The thing that crawls across our road right here? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so... Well, the reason that I'm able to connect to those things is because of the fact that I look on Reddit for a lot of my research, because there's so many people on there. There's, like, billions of people on there, so you can just search things on Chrome and then go on there. And
yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So, these are a set of emails.
Okay.
So, I'm gonna read it like that. Ready?
Okay.
My brother referred your email address to me. He thought that you may have an answer to what I saw this past July while camping in the Sierra Nevadas near Tioga Lake, California. My teenage son and I were camping in our RV, and there were other campers in the area, but not very close to us. On our third night of the trip, we encountered something that neither of us can explain. This is bear country, and I know that there are have been Bigfoot reports over the years, but what we saw the other night, as far as we can tell, is not that. We secured all of our food and other supplies in the RV, and we were getting ready to go to bed. It was about 12:30 a.m., and my son fell asleep quickly while I was getting a few things ready because we were going to leave this location later in the morning. I was taking a look at the map when I started to hear a high-pitched scream. At first, I thought it was a coyote, but it was a single scream and sounded more human, like a woman's scream. I opened the RV door and stood silent in the doorway. Once again, a high-pitched scream started. This time, it woke my son. We both stood in the door as the scream continued from the direction of the mountain. After about 10 minutes, the scream stopped. We both went to bed.
Us, whenever we hear anything?
Yeah. Yes, no, fuck
anyways.
That. That's none of our business. Especially in a national park.
Yeah.
The rangers can deal with that.
Okay, anyways.
Something startled me awake while I was sleeping because I woke in a panic. I looked at my watch, and it was 2:40 a.m. Then, all of a sudden, that same high-pitched scream erupted right outside of my RV. As it started, my son jumped out of his rack and fell to the floor. I grabbed my .44 just in case, and as we looked outside of the windshield, the moonlight was bright enough to illuminate a tall, thin creature with light-colored skin. My son yelled, "Zombie," and it did look like a female human form, but the face and the rest of the body looked horrible. It reminded me of an old witch, no clothes, deformed face, and long, light-colored hair, long arms and legs. I figured it stood about 7 feet, and it was walking away from the RV towards the lake. I had seen enough. I made sure everything was ready to go and drove out of there ASAP. We ended up towards Mono Lake. A few days later, I was able to talk to a ranger as he walked through the camping area. He was an older guy and quite engaging. I described what we witnessed, and my son also verified what we had seen. The ranger had a serious look on his face and said that over the last few years, we had seen a similar thing reported a few times. He said that they had called it Penelope, but he didn't know why it had gotten that name. That was all he knew. When I had got home and searched the internet, no information was available. My brother gave me your email today and said that you may have an idea of what it was. I appreciate your help. I want to say that this was in 2012.
Okay.
So, from 2012 was the earliest I could find anything online. And I think it's because this person emailed. And then they posted it online. And then everybody was like, whoa, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
But, so, 2012, the Rangers had known about it. And there had been reports before that.
Yes.
So.
As with most things.
As with most things.
Yeah.
But we're probably not going to be able to find anything online from before 2012.
Right.
Because I don't think it was on anything until 2012.
Right.
I looked for Penelope online with one small reference but little detail. I contacted Inyo National Forest Information. They directed me to the Mono Lake Ranger Station. I was able to talk to a ranger who confirmed that there were very odd sightings at Sierra Nevada Range, that one of these beings was dubbed Penelope, but he was unaware how or why the name was given. I sent out inquiries late last evening, and today I received a short email from a folklore writer in Reno, Nevada, that Penelope was supposedly a woman who became lost in the Sierra Nevada mountains several years ago and eventually became a flesh-eating monster. Okay, seems like we are getting into the urban legend column on this one.
She fits the bill on most things.
As dumb luck has it, I referenced to Penelope in a book I recently received, Eric Altman, entitled Monster Spotter's Guide to North America. We should get that. Were you just looking at it?
I just found it. Right when you read that, I fucking found it.
That's whack.
Yep.
So Penelope is in that.
Okay.
The brief description is similar to the information that I received from the folklore writer, with a few more gruesome details. It seems Penelope disembowels her victims before feasting on the remains, as well as she is supposedly responsible for a few unexplained deaths in the Sierra Nevadas. Other than that, I have no idea what LR and her son witnessed.
Wow. I've added the monster book.
I'm excited.
To our list.
Okay. So.
Huh. All right. Well, there's some food for thought.
I'm not done.
Oh, you've got more.
I've got a little bit.
Oh, okay. I'm jumping it. Okay.
Yeah, just a little bit. You know what crawlers are?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I think that rakes
mm-hmm.
and everything like that, I think those are all crawlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think Penelope is probably a crawler.
Yeah. Just more spotted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, for a definition, crawlers are described as humanoid creatures found in the United States and Canada, typically in forests. They're said to be tall, lanky, and gray humanoid creatures with no hair, extremely sharp claws, sharp teeth, and shrunken eyes. They're said to crawl extremely fast on all four limbs, and witnesses report that no matter how close they got to these creatures, they always seem to be out of focus. They're said to be very aggressive, attacking animals and humans that come too close, and they strike a shocking resemblance to the creepypasta rake, which is where the story could have gotten its inspiration from.
Right.
Is crawlers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of creepypastas are based off of real things.
Cryptids.
Yeah. Cryptids and fae and anything.
Everything.
Yeah. Anything and everything. Yeah. Now I'm done.
Okay.
Yes, that was it. I just wanted to add that little.
Well, this ran very long, but we hope that you enjoyed it. We're posting this Monday morning at 6 a.m., but we will post another one this Saturday for our normal time. We just wanted to get one out there for you, and now that we're feeling better. Sorry if you heard us sniffle quite a bit and get stuffed up through talking, but we do hope that you enjoyed it. If you have any information on any of this, if we said anything incorrectly, please correct us. We would love that. Go ahead.
I was also going to say, what shapes are we doing next? We're going to do... Hold on, I have the map right here. We're going to do Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, and North Dakota?
Yep.
That was not correct words.
North Dakota.
North Dakota. Are we doing the other line or just that line?
Just right down that middle.
Okay, so just the middle line.
Yep.
So North Dakota to Texas.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
And...
So if anyone...
If there's any that you particularly want to hear about, leave us a comment, let us know.
Yeah. So we're basically wanting to do like
more local unknown ones.
Yeah. So like if you have any like local ones, like mm-hmm. Like in Panaca we had like the thing that ran down Main Street.
Yeah.
That like nobody talked about it, but everybody knew it was there.
Yeah.
It didn't have a name, but, like, things like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can find any information out for you.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We love you all. We hope to see you later this week, and have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, witches and witchlings, that does it for another episode of The Witch's Grimm. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with family and friends, or head on over to whichever platform you're listening on and leave us a 5-star review. We post new content every Friday. If you'd like to stay up to date or engage with us, you can head on over to our Instagram or our Facebook, or leave an audio comment on our Anchor app, where we might feature you in a future episode. And if you'd like to further support this channel, head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/thewitchesgrim. Until next time, witches and witchlings, keep making magic.